Blog Talk Radio.
I'm hurting inside. Won't you please be my God? Give me peace of mind. Give me peace of mind.
Peace of mind.
Give me the Lord.
Oh, when
God calls home an angel,
He opens up heaven's doors. Oh,
God calls home an angel.
I'm holding on to Your word.
Oh.
Speaking with the host or the guests,
press 1 on your keypad, I will know that you are interested, and I will open up your line. Let me first and foremost bring in my co-host, Ms. Doretha Franklin. I'm hoping that this is her. She's hiding. Good evening.
Good evening. Hi. Hello, everybody. Hi, Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, but I do have one question for you before we actually get started.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you sneaking around with all these different numbers?
It's not a different number. This is actually my business phone number, so, and my fax. So I'm utilizing this one because I don't want my cell phone to, you know, mess anything up.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you told me that. But being that I didn't know that, you know, I had to put you out there. I had to put you on the spot. But, hey, the fact of the matter is we are excited that you are here. We know what we are going to into this evening. It's actually your baby.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, let me also say this. You know, I can't actually see everything that's going on right now because I have something going on with this.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I got you, Lynn.
Okay. The subjects that I think we are going to kind of touch on today is going to be one with those that handle the guns and concealed weapons, and then also Sankofa with Lion and Curtis. So they're going to also be on the show today as well. I know that the concealed weapons said that they will be calling in about 6:45. So, you know, we have kind of a chance to just talk about some of the things that is concerning to people. And, you know, and also give them a little bit of knowledge and just kind of get some of their feedback on how they feel about the concealed weapons, and maybe we can touch on a little bit about, you know, the incident that happened in Las Vegas.
Wow. You know, I'm glad you said that, because one of the first things I wanted to do, which I'm going to do right now for the listening audience, whether you live in Las Vegas, you're from Las Vegas, you have family in Las Vegas, you have friends in Las Vegas, whatever the case may be, myself, Ms. Franklin, Black Buffalo Radio, the entire crew, we would like to extend our deepest sympathy, our condolences, and our prayers and best wishes to the victims of the Las Vegas shootings.
Yes, yes. We will be definitely praying for everyone that has been impacted by this. I think this incident has really affected the whole nation, just because, I mean, I think one of the main issues is, you know, like, how did this happen, you know, and I don't even know, was he even labeled a domestic terrorist?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you, but I will tell you this. Okay. We've had similar incidents like this, okay, with mass shooting, unprovoked, unprecedented act of violence and terror, and some homegrown terrorism, domestic terrorism, whatever you want to call it, okay? What I want to say about that is, number one, when it comes to situations that we face involving weapons, all right, I know I'm going to have to do a lot more research before I can actually expound the way I want to, but I will say this. Okay. There is too much going on in the way of acquiring a weapon, be it for the right reason or the wrong reason. Okay, there is too much going on by way of making excuses when incidents like this particular thing that happened in Las Vegas happen. I know a lot of the shootings, the mass shootings or whatever, that we've experienced in this country, when the media gets their hands on it, okay, when the media gets their hands on it, you have to be very, very careful about what you're listening to, especially if you have any intentions on talking about it, because the media spins. That's what they do. The media spins. I don't think it's been mentioned yet, but I'm almost 100% positive that within the next couple of days, in regards to the situation in Las Vegas, the first thing they're going to say about the shooter, I'm not going to call him a perpetrator, the shooter, the first thing they're going to say about him is that he had mental issues. Okay? And what I want to say about that is it could be possible. Okay, I'm not going to count it out until it's actually counted out. But it could be possible. But then again, let's keep in mind, it could be that this guy just had a taste for killing. This guy just wanted to kill somebody. He just wanted to cause a situation. And it's happened. It's happened many times before. It's been covered up. It's been put aside. It's been ignored. It's been talked about and then pushed under the rug. The whole nine yards. It is ridiculous. Okay. Now, the only voice, and I mean, I haven't followed too much on the news today, so I could be a bit off kilter, but the only voice I have not really heard in regards to that incident was Donald Trump. And that's surprising to me because this man talks about everything. He has
that surprised you?
Yes, he has something to say about everything.
I'm not surprised. I am not surprised Donald Trump did not have anything to say. I mean, look at what everybody call him, 45. Look at what this type of, this man, just look at him. And he's supposed to be a president, but I'm not surprised that he didn't have anything to say. I mean, whatever he would have said probably wouldn't have been worth a dime anyway. So,
yeah,
I'm just...
That's beside the point because, understand what I'm saying, the leader of the free world, okay, one of his responsibilities is to address situations that affect the people of this country. This is a... Go ahead.
I think the key word is leader. And that's one thing he's not.
Well, from looking at it from the outside looking in, he's not. But technically, he is because he's the president of the United States.
Okay,
in regards to our guest this evening, if you could take some time, kind of give, even if you have to read the briefing here, give the listening audience a kind of a view on what to expect, what we're going to be discussing this evening, what we're looking forward to. I do have to step away, and in the words of my mentor, Mr. Bob Marley, we soon come back. So,
okay.
You're temporarily.
Well, like I said, the concealed weapons, they are going to come on today, and I believe that they are going to bring on someone from Erie County, you know, and there's really a lot of questions that I want to ask them in reference to the concealed weapons and, you know, who authorizes it, and then you even touched on the mental illness. You know, what type of, is there like a certain type of mental illness, or is all the mental illnesses like knocked out of the box so that way you can't get any type of weapons? And is that the only thing that they focus on, is your mental capacity? I mean, because there's other things or whatever other factors that could also contribute to someone's mental health. So that's just some of the things that I want to kind of talk about with them today. And then, you know, we also have, what is that, the silencer law that they are trying to pass too. So I want to see if that also, it plays a role in how you can get a weapon, you know. I just want to see. I really want to see what they're going to talk about today. So as we get ready to try and get everybody going tonight, you know, I really want to have some feedback from the community too, you know, on what it is that they think this concealed weapons, excuse me, what they really think about the concealed weapons, the silencer laws. Do we need stricter gun laws, you know, and can certain things be really prevented with guns? And I'm not talking about people just carrying illegal guns. I'm talking about even people that has the right to get guns or bear, you know, because from what we see from the Las Vegas incident, he had a lot of firearms. I mean, a lot of firearms. So I just want to know, and I also want to know the difference from what is it there to buy a shotgun than the concealed weapons. So if we can go to a commercial real quick. Kevin? Kevin. Well, we can't go to a commercial real quick. I am having a little bit of technical difficulties on my end, so I can't switch anything on or off. But again, once Kevin come back, we can go to a commercial, and then we can also begin to talk about you know, some of the laws, because I think that is very important. And I really want to hear you guys' opinion on this.
And guess what?
Yes.
Because I heard my name 3 or 4 times, I'm back. I'm back.
Okay. I am having some technical difficulties over here.
Okay, understandable. But let me just say this first and foremost. Tonight's show, sponsored by Word of Life Community Church, 760 Fillmore Street, Buffalo, New York. Pastor Michael Robinson. I want to give a big shout out to the church. Big shout out to Pastor Robinson for sponsoring the show. He took it upon himself. Okay. To make sure that we have a head towards the goal that we're trying to reach, which is becoming the voice of the community. And I really, really appreciate that. I also want to give a shout out to one of our other sponsors, Ms. Nikita Williams and Phenomenal Expressions Ladies Boutique, 517 Main Street, Buffalo, New York. I'm I'm not gonna go into detail about all of the fabulous things down there. Okay, but there's a lot. Okay, now we're gonna step away for a second, and when we come back, I believe our first guest has joined us. So take a minute, get it together. Black Buffalo Radio, 347-855-8032. This is an up-and-coming artist from Buffalo, one of the many amazing, talented young individuals that we have here in this city. This is Dave Stewie, and this is Preach.
Daddy, I miss you. I hear you, Daddy.
Guests who will be joining us momentarily, So don't go nowhere. Hang on, hold on to your hats. This is Black Buffalo Radio. I'm your host, I'll Be the Wise One, along with Sister Doretha Franklin.
Hey, yo, Jefe, we got to make history for real, man.
Well, you know they got that, right?
Who?
Trend Up, bro.
See, man? Now that's dope.
For real, bro, they got that, too. History by Nas and Mad Dope Apparel.
Where is it, though?
Trend Up, bro.
I know, yo. I'm trying to trend up, but I don't even know where it's at.
Oh, my bad, bro. Inside the Market Arcade in downtown Buffalo.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The old movie theater, right?
Nah, dude. 617 Main Street, the original Market Arcade.
Trend Up. Inside the Market Arcade, 617 Main Street, Buffalo, New York. Trend Up is open daily, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Don't forget to visit their website at trendupstore.com.
And we're back. Now, let's get down to business here. Ms. Franklin.
Yes.
I can tell. Our first guest, which should be from New York State Concealed and Carry Permit Training, has not arrived yet. I believe they will be here shortly. But we do have Lion on the line. So would you like to switch roles and then have me bring Lion in?
Yes, please.
It's fantastic. So I'm going to say to Lion, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
I say a lot for you, Bridget. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, hello, Lion. How are you?
I am well. How are you, sister?
Blessed. Well, I'm glad that you're able to come on to the show because I have, like, tons of questions that I really want to ask you. And first of all, for people that don't know what your organization represents, can you grace them and tell them, like, about your program?
Absolutely. This is President Lion Blyden of the Buffalo UNIA ACL, Buffalo Division number 433. I represent the government set up by the Honorable Marcus Josiah Garvey in 1920. We are in a continuous lineage right now under the President General Honorable Michael Duncan, who is the 11th President General and Administrator of this glorious government. One of the main things that Garvey had in place was defense and protection of our communities. So that is the angle that I will be approaching from this evening. For those of you that don't understand what the UNIA ACL was or is, it is the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League. It is the Pan-African government set up by over 20,000 Africans and Marcus Garvey in 1920 for the full month of August, where they came up with the Constitution, the Declaration of Rights of Negro Peoples of the World, the National Anthem, the flag of the red, black, and green, and the pledge.
Okay. Now, can you tell the listening audience how you become a member?
Yes. First and foremost, it's constitutional. According to the UNIA Constitution, all members, all descendants of Africa are ordinary members of the UNIA ACL government. In order to be, to have influence on elections and vote and things of that nature and receive benefits from the government, you'd have to become a dues-paying member of a local division. Basically, you'd get into contact with me if you are in the Western New York area, Western New York, Syracuse, Rochester, Toronto. We have a chapter in Toronto. You can get in touch with me by email, lionblyden@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook under UNIA ACL Buffalo Division or Toronto Division, Toronto Chapter of Buffalo Division 433.
Okay. Now, it was something you said in the beginning about what you wanted to talk about with the community. Was the community policing, your position on that?
My position on community policing. I think many people are approaching that question from the wrong angle. I think we need to focus on building the village mentality first. People, we lost that saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And then by extension, it takes a village to raise a nation. It's always been my feeling that the reason we have a lot of the issues we have in our communities, besides the forced issues that are put upon us, are due to the to people's lack of feeling like they have an opportunity to own, like they actually matter to larger entities and the so-called leadership of the communities. And so usually the crimes that we are usually so reactionary to are emotional outbursts of, most times. And a lot of these things, I believe, can be diminished with more opportunity and more opportunity for ownership in these communities. Because if the one saying I always say is, if these people are people, the children, the young people that's out here shooting each other and doing all this craziness in our city, if they only feel like they're going to be able to own a pair of sneakers or a car, or they only going to own that area they block or their corner, they're going to fight to the death to protect it. And that's exactly what's happening, even if it's just their own reputation. So, you know what I'm saying? Some of that, you know, lack of concern for someone else's life over what I can consider my own, people are going to take ownership every time. And so I think we need to preach ownership and preach more togetherness in this, in the community aspect and a village mindset. And I think some of the things will take care of themselves.
Well, where did part of this, where did the mindset kind of fall off at, you know, if, you know, from like how I was raised, it, you know, you had a lot of structure and you had a lot of discipline and, you know, everybody would be able to get on you in your village. So what's the difference between then and now?
Outside influence.
Which is?
Our problem is, like, just like you look at your household, right? There was nobody from outside that was going to come in and make some sort of decision inside that household. And that was due to the parents that was involved in that household that we're talking about. Now, a lot of these people have been forced out of the family structure. We know the history of the plan to make sure the black man is not in the black family's picture. Some of us are able to defend against that, and others have fallen short. And so we have a lot of single-parent homes, and you know that whole story. We know it because people have been singing that song since before I was out here. So the lack of family structure is primary. That's primary concern. And then, again, but that was partially forced on us. And then to try and make it back, you know what I'm saying, the men are trying to find different jobs and try and provide, can't find that work unless they go out of the city. You know what I mean? It's just getting out of hand. And what we need to do is try and find our own way rather than trying to appease the people, the very people that's oppressing us, right? Try and figure out a way to link together. Get these same men, rather than trying fighting for a job over here or over there, let's build something of our own and then become producers and have people come to us. And that's got to be the mindset. And I'm not sure exactly how we can get to that, but we lost that a while ago when they started shooting our leadership. Everybody that came out and started talking about that ended up getting sold out by so-called black people who were trying to impress their other non-black friends or bosses. So that's where it fell off, and we need to get back to unification.
Okay. Well, I think one of the main concerns about unification is us being able, as a community, as a village, to be able to protect ourselves from those outside influences, to be able to protect ourselves from, you know, different sorts of policing, you know. We want to give our children a fair shot. And you know, everyone doesn't believe that your kids wake up one morning and say, oh, I want to be a drug dealer. Oh, I want to go sell crack. Oh, I want to steal cars. I want to go rob a bank. You know, so how can we tie us being able to manage our community ourselves, whether it be in community policing, whether it be community mentoring, whatever you want to kind of put a limit on it with, how can we help ourselves to do that? And what would that look like to you?
Well, it would look like basically, I mean, you know, I just saw something earlier today dealing with, I can't remember, Willett Street or something like that, what was before Black Wall Street. But the Black Wall Street model is the model, right? It's doing. They were forced to do business amongst themselves, so they did. We are currently forced to do business amongst ourselves, and we are doing everything we can do to not do it. So somehow we have to convince that doing for ourselves would benefit ourselves, as opposed to, I use the analogy, it's just like a basketball team. Somehow all of our best players is just clamoring to fight for the, to play for the other side. And it's like, yo, if we could build our team with our best players, we would be on a better footing. One of the, I think if the higher educated of us came and actually built something that the youth in our communities could benefit from, that would be a good look. Instead, we have them building for themselves. If the people who know business came to the people who are looking to try to learn about business, rather than trying to fleece them, teach them how to do business, and then y'all go out there and make money together. But instead, we're charging each other triple and double what we would even consider charging someone else. And it's, you know, we have to look to each other with love all the time, and we don't. We always trying to look at how we can get over. And the village mentality, that's never been that way.
Okay, you mentioned something about Marcus Garvey. Now, somewhere in there with Marcus Garvey, they helped the community. They policed, you know, the issues that was going on in the community. They mentored the children and the families, because, and they continually taught, you know, that village mentality. So how can we do this now?
Well, since you brought up Garvey as an example, we followed the example. Right, the reason he was doing it is because we were forced into that position. He created the Black Cross Nurses.
Now?
Oh yeah, for sure. He created the Black Cross Nurses because the Red Cross would not hire black nurses. We in a situation right now where we know that the Red Cross, when they get in donations, they take it 90% and only giving 10% to the people. So, rather than go and create the Black Cross Nurses, we complain about the Red Cross. The UAL. Yes, they did patrol their own neighborhoods, right? The Universal African Legion is the military defense unit of the nation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people hear that and think, they want to think, oh, Black Panthers, oh, you're so militant. But they don't – nobody ever discusses the Jewish community patrols. Everybody listening, go Google, you know, Jewish community police patrols. They had their own police unit. I'm not sure exactly what – top of my head, I'll find the notes and I'll get that back to you. If you look at the Seneca Nation, they got their own police unit. We already know there's certain things you can't do in certain areas of the city. You can't even, certain people feel, driving while black is a real thing in certain areas of this city. So we know that others police their areas. We just decided that we can't because we feel like we won't be allowed. And that's just, you know, that's self-hatred. We don't feel enough love for ourselves that we can do for ourselves. It's always, oh, no, they won't let us. And it can't be that. That has never been the way our village worked.
So how can we encourage our people to understand, you know, our community to understand the necessity of this?
I don't think that's the issue. I think everybody knows the necessity. People don't understand how to do it, right? What is, you know what I'm saying? And they don't think it can be done. We know something's got to be done. They kill black people are shooting each other in the streets, and white cops are shooting black people all over the country. people know there's a problem. What do we do about it? They say, my response is always nationhood. We should always unify, follow the Constitution and Declaration and Garvey's words of be black, buy black, and everything else will take care of itself. But people are afraid of that because they got connections, they have friends, they got bosses that they're trying to look up to. And the issue is all of that is secondary. We have to sacrifice everything, not just for ourselves, not for our children, but for our grandchildren, right? We probably are never going to see the benefits of what we're talking about doing. But we got to just get out there in the streets and do what Garvey did.
So what have your,
what have your group done?
What have they done to, like, try to encourage people to understand Garveyism?
To understand Garveyism? Well, we talk about institutions. We talk about the only movement that created institutions where the entire nation benefited was the UNIAACL. They created the Black Star Line Industries, okay? When the people knew they were able to buy into something that they were going to benefit from, everybody had held their head higher. Just off that alone, like, yo, our nation is great. Just that alone, you got a different type of respect for yourselves and your respect for your people. When you can show people, see, the problem here in Buffalo especially is people feel like it's a lot of folks selling out, right? So when the children hear the conversations about, oh, well, you know, ain't nothing going to get done anyways. You know, they just going to go waste the money anyway, do what they want to do anyways. When the children hear the adults saying that, that's what they're going to grow up thinking. So, in effect, the elders, and us included, have sort of destroyed our politics, our political effort. Because if you can go around, you can walk around the city and ask 20 children if they're going to get in, if they want to get in politics, and you get a zero response. So when we say that we want to patrol the streets and monitor our own areas, we just do it. There's no necessity to ask permission, and there's no time to do it. We just do it.
Well, does that require you to have a concealed weapon when you do that? Does that, you know, is it funding? Do you guys need funding in order to do that? Like, what would it take for this to happen throughout Buffalo?
Well, if we talk about doing our own community police force, we definitely will have to follow the laws of the land that we live in. That's according to our Constitution, right? So as far as concealed carry, there are laws that go along with that, and I'm just going to leave that there. Funding, of course. We need funding to be able to recruit. We are looking for new members all the time that's interested in not just patrolling for the purpose of locking people up and adding to a bigger problem, but for the purpose of teaching, right? Teaching that the village must come first. The funny thing about when I used to work with children, when you got the one rowdy child in the classroom, you give them responsibility. When you give them responsibility, they then change their behavior. With them changing their behavior, the ones that follow them will follow suit. And it's the same mentality that's got to come out to our community. These ones that's out here doing all the rah-rah nonsense, you give them some sort of responsibility, legal responsibility. Mm-hmm. And in that, that's the way, like, people forget about the Garveyites, right? But people love to refer to the Panthers. That's what the Panthers did. Them gangsters and stuff that was in those different cities, they turned righteous and started monitoring their own city, protecting their area. The way the Crips and the Bloods started was monitoring and protecting and policing their own areas. All three of those movements got corrupted by outside forces. So, you know what I'm saying? Our focus is to make sure that we stay race first from the top to the bottom, and then we monitor those of our race that are questionable, and we make sure that we maintain and defend our nation, whether it just be two houses on a block or it be the entire East Buffalo.
Now, the community policing would work with the regular police, correct?
Again, we would have to follow any laws of the land.
Okay.
So, yes.
Okay. Now, I do have...
Hello. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut in, but I just had to get in here. I'm loving this conversation. Mr. Lyon, I think your on the right track. Your head is in the right place. Your heart is big. But I have to step in and play devil's advocate. Okay.
Okay.
That's part of what I do. I'm Kevin Womble. I'm founder and host of Black Buffalo Radio along with Ms. Franklin. I'm listening to what you're saying, and I agree to maybe 75%. Okay, and the reason I say that is because one of the comments you made was these youngsters that are out here doing the things that they are doing, okay, give them a positive purpose and pray to God that it is enough to help them change and start moving in a positive direction, change their life, change their lifestyle, you know. It's possible. It works with some, but I have to say personally, I personally think that it is too late for a lot of these youngsters, not because they can't, but because they don't want to. They don't want to. They have adjusted themselves and conditioned themselves to live the life that they are living now. They find it to be more productive. They find it to be more lucrative to them. They do not care about the consequences.
They, you know what, Bridget? Hold on. Let me pause you right there. I agree with you, what you just said a minute, but look at that, though. They don't want to because what they're doing feels more lucrative. Now, that's mm-hmm. where us as elders, we got to make sure that something else is more lucrative in front of them. That's where our elders have failed us. There's no question about that. And now it's not necessarily a blame thing, but it's we all have to take responsibility and accountability for what we do specifically. So when I look around the city of Buffalo and I look around the country, I'm 40 years old, right? When I look around the country, but Buffalo specifically, and I see nothing built for us, I've seen countless public speakers come to the city. Right, Maulana Karanga and everybody, because I just recently wrote a book. Malcolm was here, Martin was here, and I'm looking around, and there's no money-making apparatus for any of these youth for them to think that that's another option for them. The only thing, as a matter of fact, I use another example that I show people. You go around the city, you've got the different areas of the city. You've got Little Italy all up and down Hurdle, Spanish Town on Niagara, right? Chabad Lubavitch all over the city, the Polish Cadet Center all over the city, the Ukrainian Center down on Broadway or on Genesee, right? All of these folks, the Chinese and Buddhists, right? The Japanese Buffalo Center, all over the place. If any of those are embassies, people don't want to think of them that way, but they are. Because now if any of those nationalities decided they needed something from anywhere, right, and I'm including the West Side with the Hispanic community, okay, when they need something, they go to those centers. When we need something, we go downtown.
Right.
Meaning nobody, and the most callous way I can say this, and it's going to be rough, and this is for everybody, go and get it out the way, and I won't say it no more. The only thing that you can look at this as is our elders dropped the ball. You feel me? And I'm not saying that people didn't try. And I'm not saying that they wasn't stopped by outside forces again. But now we're here looking at the situation, and we getting gentrified while we talking about not being gentrified. You see me?
Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. So, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like I said,
I cut you off, so go ahead.
And say basically every single show that we go on the air, one of the things I say in regards to the up-and-coming generation, okay, yes, I'll be the first one to admit, my generation failed to pass the torch, okay? We basically opened the door to the situation that our youngsters are going through right now. We opened the door, but we didn't give them any options, okay? We didn't give them the lessons that we got. So they feel like they have to step out there and do things on their own. And
so what?
9 out of 10, when you have to do things on your own, you're going to do what you think is best at the moment because you're not planning. You're planning right now, not years ahead.
Precisely,
you know. But like I said, for some, it's possibly too late, but then there are those that are waiting and ready and willing to move ahead, to learn, to start doing things productive, not just with their lives, but with those that are around and those that affect the environment that they live in. Okay? So right. We still, as the elder generation, we still have a chance to atone to an extent for some of the things that we fail. Okay?
And I think we're here, you know what I'm saying? We're at the point now where we can really start doing it. And the sister asked me, like, what do it look like? And it's really just somehow, I mean, okay, I know it focuses on community policing, guns and everything. Also dealing with, let me just say this real quick about that. The guns, I think the gun issue, our children don't have an example to follow, a positive example to follow. Now, I'm currently in a meeting right now, right? I just stepped out to do the call. But, you know, I'm in the meeting right next door to the meeting that's happening with the Dory Miller Gun Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you teach in, if our children only see illegal activity with guns, that's the only training they got with guns. So they're either going to leave guns alone or they're going to do it illegally.
Right.
With the non-Africans in the city, right, they go hunting, they go to the gun range, they have guns in the house, right? It's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, and the majority of white folks who have guns, it's completely safe with them because they learned gun safety, gun laws, and gun responsibility,
right?
And they also aren't in those situations where they feel like, you know what I'm saying, oh, my God, you stepped on my sneakers, boom, right? Hold on one second. Give me one second, Chuck.
Okay, well, when Lion comes back, we're going to finish up this conversation, and then we are going to step into the original purpose of the show, which is to bring on some members from the New York State Conceal and Carry Permit Training Club. I'm assuming that's what it is. I'm just putting words together. But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the Firearms Training of Western New York, yes.
Firearms Training. And that's what it is. Firearms training for conceal and carry sounds so much better to me.
Yes. Yes.
But I really, really do like the ideas that Lion is speaking about. I'm looking forward to possibly getting together with him, doing some work with him, assisting in the advancements that they're trying to make. And I'm praying to God that we can make up for the mistakes we made by opening some eyes, okay, and bringing some productivity to the village that seems to be dwindling, that seems to be withering away, you know. But you have to keep positive in mind. You have to remember that there's always hope, and we have
right.
to keep that in mind. We have to keep that close to our heart, okay, because allow hope to step away, you're losing. Okay? You're losing. Very shortly, we're going to bring on James Emmett from the Firearms Training of Western New York and Alan Brown from the Erie County Pistol Permit Office. I'm looking forward to getting with them. Okay, I'm going to bring both of them in right now, being that the call with Mr. Lion has dropped. I apologize for that. There are technical difficulties at times, so give us a break.
Okay.
I'm open. I have both lines open, and I want to say welcome. Thank you for joining us, and I'm looking forward to the conversation that we're going to have with you. Who am I speaking with?
This is James Emmett.
Mr. Emmett, how are you?
This is James. Yeah, this is James Emick with Firearms Training in New York.
And this
Hi,
is Alan Brown
you?
From the Erie. How are you? This is Alan Brown from the Erie County Pistol Permit Department.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining. And I hear did I hear a young lady, or was that my co-host?
I think your mother is also on the phone.
Okay.
Yes. We might have somebody else
on. Yes, my name is Carol Lett Meadows.
Harold, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. So who are we going to start with, Ms. Franklin?
Well, let's start with James and Alan. I want to know a little bit more about how can you obtain a pistol permit and who gives permission?
New York State law regulates the pistol licenses outside of New York City. So if you wanted to apply for, we call it a pistol permit under the law, they call it a pistol license, but if you wanted to apply for one through New York State, you would apply for it in the county you live in. So it's regulated by the state, and they're put out through the counties that you live in. So you would apply, and this is where Alan comes in. Alan works in the office that processes the permits for Erie County.
And basically what you would do is basically what you would do, there's a process in each county. There's an application process. We have the applications in the office, and they're also available on the website at erie.gov under the clerk's page. So that function in Erie County is handled under the Erie County Clerk's Office. And you would pick up one of these applications. There are 13 steps on the application. It explains to you the process as to what you need to do. You also have to take a firearm safety course. That is required unless you are unless you're prior military or law enforcement. And you have to take a safety course in order to apply. You have to be 21 years of age in order to apply. That is according to New York State law.
We can ask a question. Do dependents of the military count?
Nope.
No.
Dependents of the military can apply, but they will have to take a firearm safety course.
Okay, I tried to slide that in.
We do offer discounts. So we offer discounts to service members and their family. So the course is normally $60, and we give it for $50 if you have a family member who's a service member, or for any service members, current or former, that want to take it. So mention that when you take the class, and you get the $10 off.
So you look at that.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm dying to hear from Carolyn.
Yeah, if I could just jump in here for a second, going just kind of riding the coattail of Lion a little bit, and also blending in with this topic. I hear the two gentlemen saying that you have to be 21 in order to apply for a pistol permit, but you actually don't have to be 21 to engage a child in firearm safety or allow them to use a firearm. Children
Correct.
Can use shotguns and rifles. And a shotgun or a rifle, you don't need a permit for. You don't even need a hunter's license. You only need your New York State driver's license. And I would encourage, like Lion was saying, it's about teaching the children gun responsibility. And if a child handles a weapon and they feel the power of that weapon under the tutelage of adults, it's a lot less likely that they will mishandle weapons. My daughter, she's a heck of a shot. She works with a shotgun. She also does archery. So, you know, it's imperative that we teach our children some of these things so that they can respect things that can do people significant harm.
Mm.
I like
that. There are provisions for that through the different gun clubs and firearms training centers. For children. James, you want to...
Yeah, you know, in states where they mandatorily teach gun safety in schools, so in the middle schools and grade schools, they have mandatory firearm safety courses. They have the lowest amounts of firearm-related accidents with youth, but also the lowest amount of crimes committed by youth in states that still mandatorily teach these classes. So the statistics
mm-hmm.
show, even the CDC said that in the last 100 years, firearms-related accidents in states that teach these programs have dropped 91%. And this was somewhere they said The NRA had said 90%. And when President Obama said, well, we want the CDC to study this, the CDC actually came back and said it was actually a 91% drop. So they actually backed that claim up that teaching youth does help prevent accidents, but it also drops the crime rate of guns committed with youth. So there's an exact correlation there that's been proven, backing up what you guys have been saying.
But as an official, I have to go on record, and just to clarify, it is you have to be 21 years of age in order to
for a handgun,
for a handgun, not for rifles and shotguns, long guns. I think anything over 16 inches, which basically that's what that would fall under. Anything under 16 inches falls under anything 15 and a half falls under
the long gun.
Right. But long guns are, you do not need a permit for. Anything that would be concealable, you would need a permit for. There is one caveat. There's only one caveat for ownership of, or to be able to have a pistol permit and be under the age of 21, and that is if you are honorably discharged from the military prior to turning the age of 21, then you can apply and receive a pistol permit at that point. That's the only caveat for that. Everything else, you must be 21. You can take the course prior to being 21. Let's make that clear. And the safety course is good for 5 years, 5-year period on the safety course. So they can take the course prior, but they have to be 21. They can come in on their 21st birthday. We've had it happen often. But you have to be 21 in order to get an actual pistol permit in New York State.
There is a training clause within the law, though, that does allow, you can teach youth to shoot handguns in New York. They can't get pistol permits. They cannot own handguns. They cannot have legal possession of the gun. But if you took your kid or you had an instructor take it, the law says anybody between the age of 14 and not yet 21 can shoot a handgun under supervision of an instructor or a parent or guardian at a range that has conservation in its title and charter. And what they mean by that is if you went to a local gun club that was a nonprofit and they had a handgun range, you could let your kids shoot your handgun. You couldn't go to, like, Wolcott's or Niagara Gun Range because those are for-profit businesses, but you could go to a nonprofit gun range. And the drawback is you can't shoot at your family property with a handgun in New York with your kids. It would have to be at a gun range under supervision. And then when they turn 21, they have to get a pistol permit. If they possess a handgun, even if they're just target shooting, it is a crime under New York state law. So the law is strict on that.
I think while we're talking about stuff like that, also, we should also mention that if you have a shotgun, I don't know if this is just within the city of Buffalo or if it's New York State as a whole, you cannot carry your weapon loaded. You have to carry it unloaded, and once you get where you're going to your range or if you're going hunting or whatever, then you can load your weapon, but you cannot travel with your weapon loaded.
That's actually not within the penal law. That's actually within conservation code. So penal law says that you can have a conservation code applies to hunting. So it's a common misconception. And I will state when I tell you that you can transport a loaded long gun, people do get arrested and ticketed for it because it's a confusion over the way the law works. So conservation code is for hunting, which states you can't have a gun loaded. You cannot have any ammunition within reach of the gun while transporting it to and from hunting. That's only applied to hunters, but yet it has been applied to everyday civilians by law enforcement. It's a mistake within the law. The interpretation of the law. So the city
Thank
of Buffalo does
that.
Have ordinances. Yep. But
I would not suggest becoming the test case for that.
Exactly, and that's why I stress that. A lot of people ask me what happened. You used to see people driving around with a shotgun in the back of their window. Why don't you see that anymore? Did they make that illegal? They didn't. It just never was a wise thing to do. I mean, you get your vehicle broken into, your gun gets stolen, you have any altercation with somebody and they're going to tell the cops you had a gun. It's just not a smart thing to do, and that's why people stopped doing it. But it's not illegal to do so, but I wouldn't advise you to do it. So.
Right. Now, here comes the devil's advocate. I have a couple of things. Okay. Number one, the first thing I want to ask, are there any classes for disabled or handicapped persons?
Specifically, just for disabled people or classes that accommodate?
Classes that accommodate.
Because any of the classes we teach are handicap accessible and accommodate, and any live fire course that I've ever participated in as a student or taught did accommodate for any disability that anyone had. I've not yet seen a class specifically for disabled people, but that is something that, you know, we could like one-on-one training, things like that. I was actually in a class in Kentucky with a guy who was born with no arms. He only had hands, and it was amazing. It was amazing to watch this guy work a rifle and handgun better than some people born without his disabilities could. And there's a way, you know, I've had people say, well, I have arthritis, or I cannot use my arm, or I'm in a wheelchair. You know, people who have disabilities that have been able to absolutely work the gun and function it properly with just proper teaching and technique.
Okay, now here's a scenario. In regards to disability, an individual who is visually impaired in one eye.
Mm-hmm.
Let me chime in here. This is quite interesting. New York State has issued permits to people who are listed as legally blind.
This is the exact answer I give as well. Yes.
So if you're impaired in one eye, that's not going to stop you from getting a pistol permit. I don't exactly. Yeah, that's the question. I know the question coming.
I actually did train a blind person before. It wasn't visually impaired. He was blind from birth, and we helped him a lot. I mean, it wasn't just point downrange and fire. We gave him direction. We stood there with him. We walked through everything. This is not somebody who had plans of carrying concealed. This was someone who wanted to be able to. They wanted to be able to shoot a gun, and they thought that they would never be able to. So.
Right.
It is available with disabilities to most people.
And now comes the
Well, it's problem. A $2 million question. This is the $2 million question that's coming because I got a couple of parts to this.
Yes.
One.
Okay. In regards to, I see we lost Carolette. I'm hoping she'll come back. But in regards to what Carolette was saying, I did some reading on this long gun situation. Okay, now first and foremost, for me personally, I'm going to say this, and this is what I firmly believe. A gun is a gun is a gun is a gun is a gun. Okay, outside of the size, length, I do not see a difference because it is still a weapon, not necessarily a mass destruction, it can be, but it is still a weapon. And I read where you do not have to have a permit for a long gun.
You do not, but you have to legally possess it in a manner that works within the codified law. So if you want to own firearms, you have to purchase them in a legal means, which in New York State means pass a background check to prove that you can legally own that gun. So
okay.
New York State, even private transactions in New York have to be done through a gun dealer with a background check. You will have people say, well, what about the gun show loophole? There is no such thing in New York State. New York State requires all firearms sold, gun shows privately, at a gun store. Every gun sold in the state is sold with a background check.
And that was actually expanded with the SAFE Act, which was passed in 2013. That was a provision in the SAFE Act that for private sales that was expanded through that, which...
You used to be able to do a private sale to someone you knew that could own a gun legally. So you couldn't knowingly sell a gun to somebody who was bounded, you know, by law not to be able to possess firearms. So what they did was they said you could no longer make that judgment call. Go to a gun store and have them pass a background check when you sell that gun to them.
Right.
Okay, well, look, now that we're talking even about the SAFE Act, Collins is trying to repeal the SAFE Act. So that means that people that have mental illnesses, would they be able to get a gun then?
No, there's no truth to that at all. All that law did was stiffen some penalties that were within the law, but it didn't change anything within the law when it came to crimes being committed. So what they did was mental health, they stiffened penalties for people who broke the law, but as of a mental health aspect, it didn't change anything within that law. It's a common misconception because people say, well, this law was passed and it made the streets safer, it changed this, it changed that, but what it really did was just strengthen penalties. So, like, if you had a firearm that was illegal, they changed it, you know, from a Class A felony to a Class D. They changed the crimes within the law, but they didn't, the punishments really, but they didn't actually strengthen the law itself. They did take certain firearms and classify them as assault rifles, if you could see me doing the air quotes when I say that, as assault rifles, but they didn't really... That law didn't change a whole lot other than definitions of firearms.
Okay.
Okay, so now, go ahead, I'm listening.
Well, my other question is, they're trying to have stricter gun laws, I guess, since this thing happened out here in Las Vegas. So what are your opinion about the silencer law?
Well, first of all, The best thing that I can bring to this discussion is that I have shot suppressed firearms before, and only in Hollywood do they call them silencers. They are actually suppressors, and what they do is they actually take the sound of a gunshot from being as loud as a jet engine to being as loud as your average rock concert. So they do not silence the gun. They make the gun quieter, but, you know, Hillary Clinton said, if a suppressor was used in that shooting, nobody would have heard the shots, is absolutely ridiculous, because what most people heard wasn't the sound of the shot. It was actually the sound of the bullet breaking the sound barrier. So that crack you hear is the bullet, not the gun. So that's why a lot of people were confused. People said, well, there were multiple shooters. I heard different sounds of shots. What people heard were the gunshots, but then they heard the bullet break the sound barrier when it came toward them. So it makes a distinctly different sound. So suppressors... Generally, what a suppressor does is it makes it so that you can shoot a gun without hearing protection. And so when you shoot a gun with hearing protection, it actually puts you at a disadvantage for knowing what's going on around you. Is somebody walking up to the right of you? Is somebody walking up to the left of you? If you're hunting and somebody's below your deer stand, sometimes it's often even hard to hear them. So what I know it sounds scary when you say they want to make silencers legal, but the term is actually suppressor, and it... You know, we always say words have meanings and words matter. And silencers, what I call them as a kid, is what we call them growing up. It's what everybody calls them, but they're actually suppressors. They suppress the sound to make it so that you don't damage your hearing, but they're still very loud. If you shot a suppressed gun, your ears are on the verge of ringing, where if you shot it unsuppressed, you could actually do permanent damage. So that's really the difference. So I actually have... I mean, right now, suppressors are legal in 47 states. They have been for years. But in order to buy them, you have to pay the government $230 per year for each suppressor that you have. And what this bill would do is undo the federal tax on owning these. So New York could still say they're illegal. These other 47 states, people would just no longer have to pay $230 per year per suppressor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that
makes a lot of money, too. That's crazy.
So the law actually makes it seem like they're going to make assassins everywhere and that suppressors will be used. But if you look at crime, there was only one crime ever committed with suppressors, and that was the Lee Malvo, the Beltway sniper, and he actually had homemade suppressors. They were shooting from inside the trunk of a car. They had covered the trunk of the car with rugs, and they had made homemade suppressors. And people still heard their shots. And actually, both of them almost went deaf shooting in that situation.
Right.
You know, when you
all
look at, like,
muffles the sound a little bit.
It muffles it enough where you don't have hearing damage. But it's still, I mean, it's quieter. Don't get me wrong. I'm not embellishing it, but it's not nearly as loud to the point where it would do permanent hearing loss.
Okay. Now, do you think it should be stricter gun laws?
It's too vague of a question. The laws, you know, when you look at the laws, like, look at the laws right now in New York State, and, you know, people say these laws are very strict, but yet none of the laws in New York would stop any of the crimes that people refer them to. So when people say, well, New York's laws are so tough, they would have stopped this. You know, like, would they have? Would New York laws have stopped the Vegas shooting? Bump stocks, no, those are legal in New York. The 60-round mags that he was using were not legal here in New York, and they were legal in Nevada. So, yes, that there's that. The rifles he used are legal here in New York, but not the way he used them in the configuration that he had them in. So, you know, he was a pilot who passed mental health background checks. He, you know, legally possessed and bought all the guns, as far as the ATF knows right now. All of the guns were legally purchased. He passed a background check for every single one of those guns. Right now, there's not a law that I can think of that would have stopped him from doing that. And people say, well, what if they would have outright banned that gun? The problem with that is, you know, that we always look at is that, you know, weed and heroin is illegal. But heroin is readily available everywhere in every city all the time. And if guns were illegal, if people wanted to murder, people are always going to murder. Louis C.K. does a really funny bit on that where he says, people who murder would just murder more, and some of us would just murder a little, you know, if murder was legal. And,
right.
You know, what they're saying is that people murder, you know, 1 in 100 of us have no problem with killing people, and that's the problem is that this, you know, like we look at what he did, Alan and I just had a big discussion about this, we look at what that man did and we say, there, you know, people are going, there has to be other shooters, there has to be a conspiracy, there has to be this, and, you know, Alan was saying that, you know, drives me crazy, and I said, it's because it's so horrific that those of us that don't murder can't understand how he did this. We can't understand why. It just doesn't comprehend with us because we don't murder and we don't see it as something that's not a problem. But there are 1 in 100 of us in society every day, 1 in 100 of every person walking around in America doesn't have a problem with murder. This is a proven psychological statistic. This man, although on the outside appeared to be normal and non-threatening, murdered people. And we as people who don't murder can't comprehend that. You know, I can't think of an amount of laws that would stop that, as sad as it sounds. I'm not saying that things don't need to change. I think from a mental health aspect, you know, a lot of these mass shooters were on heavy antidepressant drugs. You know, and then people say, well, ban people who are on antidepressants. But, I mean, 90% of the people on antidepressants would never harm themselves or anybody else. So it's a very tough subject to tackle.
Let me a simple question. I believe Carlotta is back, and we didn't have her come in a second. But what I want to ask is, in regards to this incident, in Las Vegas and some of the other mass shootings, so on and so forth, this particular incident in Las Vegas, I'm almost 100% positive, is going to cause a lot of ruckus in regards to the NRA.
Oh, man,
I'm sorry, somebody's breaking up real bad.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes. Yes.
Hello?
Yeah.
We're listening. We have you.
No, I believe that when you look at the NRA, when you look at, you know, what their statement today, they came out and said that they think that the ATF should take a look at bump fire stocks and whether they fit within the legality of the law. To me, that statement was them saying, we want to participate in a conversation about this, but at the same time, as a professional, I know that they know the ATF already is aware that those stocks are legal as the way the law is written. So for them to say, we think the ATF should look at the law, they already know the law says those are illegal. The law would need to be changed. And if you wanted to take those stocks and say that they're illegal, you would have to change the law. The ATF can do that. They can change the classification on what they consider those to be. But the law is pretty clear on whether those are illegal or not. As a matter of fact, most manufacturers will issue them with a little statement from the ATF explaining why they are legal. And the NRA knows this. So for them to come out and make a statement like that was just them saying, we want to be part of the conversation. You know, and a lot of people are like, wow, I can't believe they said that. Well, they said that because they knew what the answer was going to be. They knew the ATF would say, these are legal.
But I can pretty much assure you that after this incident, they won't be for much longer.
I think you'll get unilateral support.
They'll probably be bipartisan support on the outlawing of bump stocks after this event.
But now we know that
the problem.
We know that every state is different in regard to weapons possession permits. Actual procedure for owning a weapon, possessing a weapon, so on and so forth. Every state is different to an extent. Personally, I feel that for the safety of the public, for the safety of those that are providing, okay, I personally feel that each and every state should be under the same rule. It should be strict and it process for everyone.
Well, federal, every citizen of the United States and every resident of every state has to follow federal law on firearms. The difference is, so federal law regulates the sale, ownership, and transportation of firearms across state lines and within states. And then you have the state levels where some of the states will make it stricter to own certain types of firearms. So we all do follow the same set of laws, and then some states add laws on to it. And this is the whole purpose of the federal government and the states was so that, you know, if you said, I want to have my freedoms as a U.S. resident, but I want to have this or that, you could move to other states. And that's the whole fight where people say, if we were to make this a United States thing in every state, and people would say, well, that violates the purpose of the state's rights to be able to regulate things in their own manner. So federal law, you know, when the federal government came out and said bump stocks are illegal, they are. They're illegal in every state. So there are varying levels of it within the states, but federal law still is the law on ownership of firearms.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, listen, I want to say thank you, and I'm hoping and praying that you guys will take the time to come back and join us, not just for what you're doing, but some of the conversations that we have. I feel that you guys would have some very, very good input on some of the situations that our communities face involving guns and just protection and, you know, security all the way around. But unfortunately, we are basically out of time. We have 6 minutes left in the show, and we still have a few bills to pay. I want to say thank you to Ms. Carlotta for joining us. I appreciate your input. Gentlemen, what you do is a great thing. It's a very good thing. And I'm excited to have you here with us. Thank you very much for joining us.
Me too.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, come back and talk again, because I want to know if community organizations also come to you for gun permits.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah,
oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Get involved with the Dory Miller Club in the city. They are very active in the city.
I just told them about that.
Yep,
we were listening to the show, and we were saying, man, we wish we were involved in the conversation right from the beginning because it was great stuff.
All right. Thank you.
We'll talk to you guys soon.
Do you guys have a Facebook page?
Yes. Yep. It's actually Firearms Training in Western New York, and Dorifa actually has it.
Okay. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to connect myself with that page. So when we are on the air, which basically normally is every Thursday night at 6:30, if it's okay with you guys, what I would like to do is every time that we were on the air, I would like to put the link to the show on the air. So if there's a conversation that you would like to get involved in or that you would like to be a part of, do not hesitate to call in. Do not hesitate to join us.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And y'all have a good evening.
No, I'm calling out of Carolette. I'm sorry. Is Carolette still with us?
Yes, she is.
Well, I have Carolette?
I don't know. I know she said her phone was dying earlier, so.
Well, Dorita, Miss Franklin, Sister Franklin, that was very, very exciting.
Yep.
That was very intriguing.
Coming up.
Is that Carolette?
No, this is Lion.
Oh, hi, Lion.
That's why I'm sorry. I got the wrong number in there. You know, because it's all that drop. We miss you, man.
Yeah, sorry about that. I had a little bit of a situation. I had to step away for a second.
Well, we're almost out of time, Lion, but what I would like you to do, if you have time, is just give the listening audience some information and how to contact you, what they can expect to be a part of.
Well, yeah, again, like I said, you can contact me via email, Lion Blyden, LionBlyden at gmail.com, or find me on Facebook, UNIACL Buffalo Division.
Fantastic. Listen, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Hope that you will take the time to join us again. We will have.
Last thing, the brother just mentioned Dory Miller Club. I just left Brother Carey and the Dory Miller Club. They're still going, and I suggest to everybody in the city, especially Black Buffalonians, link up with Dory Miller.
All right, well, we're definitely going to get involved.
Yes.
Once again, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you will be able to join us again for some of the future conversations we're having. Like I said in the beginning, our main objective is to bring awareness to the communities, not just the Black communities, but all the communities in the city of Buffalo. At some stage, somewhere, every community in this city is suffering from something. And a lot of information, necessary information, is being withheld, is being left out. What do they call that? Redacted?
Mm-hmm.
Our objective is to break that cycle. You know,
right.
I created a page on Facebook that basically is used in my hometown, which is Paterson, New Jersey. But I created a page called If You See Something, Say Something. That's one of our models here at Black Buffalo Radio, because just like a snitch, we tell everything.
Well, you know, I think breaking the cycle is also very important. I also think that the us coming together and unifying is a big thing. The community policing aspect is a big thing. Next week we should be having, is it peacemakers or peacekeepers on the show? So I don't know if it will be Pastor Giles or he will have another representative come on. And then before we leave, I also want to talk about we have a community meeting tomorrow at Rafi Green, 5 to 8 p.m. So I hope whoever's listening, they stop down, and we're going to have a spaghetti dinner, and, you know, we're going to have some good conversation, and we're going to start putting some things into perspective.
Sounds good. And unfortunately, Ms. Franklin, we have 55 seconds left in the show. I want to thank everyone who participated, everyone who joined us, everyone who listened in. This is Black Buffalo Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Wallace Wamba Sr., also known as I Be the Wise One, along with Sister Doretha Franklin. Thank you. Come again.
Tonight.
Remember.
All right.
If you see something, say something, because we have to look out for each other. We can't expect those that are supposedly in power to look out for us all the time. So we have to do our own thing. Black Buffalo Radio, we are out the door. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful evening, everybody, and join us again next Thursday, 6:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Good night.
Good night, guys.